You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, emergency podcast. We never post in the middle of the day, but we have to today. Me and Adam are both here for this because it's big news. The Pacers are adding a substantially solid player to their roster. Trevor Booker has been waived by the Philadelphia 76ers. Sorry, bought out by the Philadelphia 76ers, which is actually a crucial difference compared to being waived. He will join the Pacers as soon as he clears waivers on Friday. Tony East, me from the West Indianapolis Community News, and Adam from Indy Cornrows are going to break it down for you. Adam, how pumped are you or not pumped?
Well, nice job saving there on the open. We've been told by our lovely boss, David Locke, to introduce ourselves as to we're reaching a new audience because we are expanding. We are growing as a podcast. We are up to almost 11,000 monthly downloads, which I don't know how many. That could mean thousands of more in audience. But so good job saving that at the end to finally snag up who we are. So if you're new out there listening to us, that's who we are. But I'm excited to talk about Trevor Booker because it finally adds a 10th guy to this Pacers team, and no longer will we get to have to see Al Jefferson, basically.
Yes. Well, also no more TJ Leaf, which you can look at that two ways of, you know, at the beginning of the season, I'd have been bummed that we're not seeing TJ Leaf anymore because development. But now that they're pretty firmly cemented in the push for, you know, a top four seed, you want the 50 wins, you know, adding a guy like Booker beyond the contributions that he himself brings, you know, the minutes you no longer have TJ Leaf or Bojan even playing four, you know, you're better for it.
Yeah, and this is just a sign that Leaf is just not going to play that much throughout the season, which is fine. He sort of reached his, I want to say, like, usefulness in some sense for the season. I mean, obviously, he's super young. He still is just not there defensively at all, so it's fine. I mean, I'm not mad about not seeing Leaf in the playoffs. I think, you know, Leaf is not good next year, something to worry about if he's not improving, but right now it's fine. Leaf's kind of reached his best he could be this season almost, and bringing Booker in at least allows them to now play basically Sabonis at the backup five, play less, like you said, a Bojan at the four, and it just helped the team to death overall.
Yeah, and that was just my transition, not involving Booker, but talking Booker himself. I mean, do you even expect him to play more than like 10 minutes a game?
You know, I think it's actually going to depend. I think Booker is kind of similar to Thaddeus Young in some sense. Here's how I'm going to put it, in similar. And what I mean by is they're both undersized power forward in some sense. And by that I mean is that instead of playing Sabonis at the four, like we've seen a lot of those Turner Sabonis lineups more recently, I can imagine they just sort of try to seamlessly fit Booker in instead of trying to kind of mix it up with Sabonis, which is kind of sad because I wanted to see more Sabonis Turner, but I think Booker probably gets to 10 or 15 minutes. I think especially if, depending where Glenn is at, if he's only going to play 15 off the bench, you sort of, that creates like one player essentially in playing time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he fits really well with Turner on offense, especially. And I think I do agree with you about the undersized four thing. You know, he's kind of a bruiser and he's a lefty and he's got nice touch because his left-handed shot, you know, lets him shoot around and over guys who expect right-handed shots, but he's only 6'8". And 228 pounds, which for the play style he has isn't perfect, but he's just super aggressive and you know, that kind of caters to how he plays in the paint. But that's his thing, is like he's really good in the paint on both ends, and that's kind of where he's limited. And that's why I think he's only going to play like 10 or 15 minutes, because I don't think there's a way you can play him with Sabonis, because they're both, you know, they would clog it up too much. And Nate just said before the Hawks game that the best part about having Glenn back is they can stretch the floor more, which they're trying to do. So I don't think he'll ever play with Sabonis, but I think he would go well with Turner. And I already said, I think he's a much, much, much better backup four than what they've had.
And I think McMillan actually likes to play Sabonis and Young together, to be honest. I think he likes the lineups of Stevenson, Sabonis, and Young, because when you play, basically what they were kind of doing was either playing Big Al at times, or they were kind of like bringing in Sabonis to back up Young and then back up Turner, and kind of trying to like manipulate the three of them into, you know, whatever minutes available, 96 minutes for the three of them. But I think, you know, McMillan, you might see a quick trigger on Thad and then see Thad more on the bench, but the bench unit, which will help them overall on the bench unit, get some offense going. Also, Thad is underratedly on defense. He's just underrated in general on the defensive end, the things he can kind of create on turnovers and fast breaks. So I think overall, this is probably a move to more kind of push that towards playing with some of the bench unit more often, I think that will obviously still close games like he's been doing. But you might see, you know, Thad get pulled at like the 8 minute mark of games first quarter instead of, you know, going, I think he goes right now to like almost the 4 or 2 minute mark in the first.
Yeah, I totally think that will be, you know, one of the options. But I do think it'll be a turnstile like that where either one of Turner or Thad comes out for their backup at their position, and then the next sub is the opposite position. And they just keep rotating to keep the to make sure that they don't have any bad duos together. And I don't think Booker would necessarily be bad with Sabonis. I just think that's probably the worst realistic duo we're going to see. Just because their play styles are not really complementary.
Yeah, but Sabonis seems to fit with a lot of players. He makes it work.
His improved passing has really changed my outlook on who he fits with.
Yeah, and he does just a really good job of space. I don't want to say he doesn't like space before his 3-point shot, but the way he moves around on the court, it almost like is an always a threat of all of a sudden he ends up in the right spot. You know, he always kind of finds his spot to get a shot on the floor. You watch it a lot, like, you know, all of a sudden the whole lane get clogged by, you know, Vic. Let's say Vic comes in the lane and then you see Young there. All of a sudden Sabonis kind of creaks out just enough to get a nice little shot off or get one of those like one-handed left-hander little float shots up. The only reason I like to see Booker and Sabonis go, to be honest, would be because they're both left-handed and they would like completely throw defenses off.
Yeah, no, that's how I was actually thinking that when I was talking about it, because doesn't it seem like post players struggle with the switch to guarding lefties more than other
positions? Yeah, and honestly, sometimes I forget. I mean, now I've gotten used to it, but I forget Sabonis is left-handed. Like, he'll go for a dunk, and I'll be like, wow, he dunked that ball like on the other side of the hoop. Oh, wait, he's left-handed. That's why. Like, it's the kind of thing where, at least if you, like, I think in a playoff series, it becomes less effective because teams are watching you on film nonstop. But during the regular season, night after night, players don't always get to watch, you know, the backup center a ton on film. So they don't, like, remember he's left-handed. So, you know, you get a couple easy buckets out of it, or because the defense is kind of like, make one little move to the right because I think, oh, he's gonna go right, but then he goes left. It's Bill Simmons talked about a lot in his podcast is how like the left-handed guy sometimes gets an easy pass because he wouldn't get it if he was right-handed.
Exactly, and that helps Booker too, because and he's him being aggressive leads into that too, because he catches him off guard and then his aggressiveness lets him shoot right away. Another thing I want to talk about with Booker is the whole playoff eligibility thing. It's kind of a confusing-ish rule, but you can't be on another NBA roster in March at all to play for another team in the playoffs. So if he just got straight up waived by the Sixers, he would technically be on the Sixers cap sheet for the 48 hours he was on waivers. So he wouldn't have been eligible to play with another team, but he got a buyout. So that means he's not on their cap ledger during the waiver process. So after 48 hours, then he becomes unrestricted and can play for another team in the playoffs. And, you know, it looked like it was just a report like, okay, Trevor Booker's coming to Indiana, but then he tweeted, Indy, what's up, or something like that, or let's get it. So he's definitely coming. We just have to wait till Friday. That's the other logistical thing in this that we haven't said yet is with the addition of Trey McKinney-Jones' 10-day, you'll have to waive a player on Friday to sign him, but it's going to be Trey McKinney-Jones. I don't even think we have to guess otherwise, right?
Yeah, and this is why you tune into the Locked On Pacer podcast if you're out there listening. It's because Tony, he knows all the minute little CBA rules just like that one. Where he's learned them, whether he's read them somewhere. I don't think he's read the whole CBA, but
I have twice.
Okay, he has apparently. I've read some parts of it online, but I don't know if it's whatever he has. That's why you tune in this podcast. There's another show, I'm not going to say the name of it, but on Twitter, who messed up the Al Jefferson contract by saying they're going to cut Jefferson because
I'm sorry,
the money they were going to save, but they were wrong. And if you listen to this Locked On Pacers podcast, we've been saying that since June. I mean, we've been on it since the very start of free agency and whatnot. You know, we talked last week, even we talked about Al Jefferson's date, how he's not guaranteed until January and all those things. So this is why you got to tune in to Locked On Pacers, because Tony has those little nuggets that you just wouldn't expect. Obviously you follow him on Twitter, he gets you a little bit, but he really goes into the detail on this show.
No comment.
And for that, Tony is a wimp still, but he's still really good at finding out about the minute details.
I do love the minute details of the CBA, and that's how that works. So, but he won't be on the team till Friday. So if you're listening to this before the Hawks game, we'll still have TMJ. If you're listening to a Hawks or if you're listening after the Hawks game, first of all, check out the Hawks recap that I'm about to do. Second of all, he might have been waived already. They might just keep him till Friday because why not have him do NBA practices, but then they have to pay him. So it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that, but that's when the official announcement will come. As for Booker specifically, when he joins, you know, we've talked about him being a backup four. He's really that bruiser type. He's much better on defense than offense. He can guard centers pretty well. And I think he'll be really useful against teams that also do two bigs, like the Pistons and the Pelicans used to be. He'll be more effective against those kind of teams because he's better at guarding centers in the paint. He's had actually a positive defensive box plus minus every single year of his career, including his rookie year, which is pretty tough to do. So I look forward to him on that end of the floor, making it tough for guys to finish around the basket. And another important thing that isn't being talked about too much is that he's injury assurance, you know, knock on wood. But if another big does get hurt, you know, Booker is serviceable enough that you're not totally killed in your rotation throwing him in.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to with you was mainly this signing is a move of some kind of mix of experimenting and not having to play out Jefferson or TJ Leaf.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, it's really what this signing is for. It's in case, you know, we've seen Turner's been injury prone this season. Sabonis hasn't, well, his biggest thing was he got the flu or got the sniffles for like a week, but it was fine. But he's insurance in case somebody gets hurt. And also in insurance, the case, maybe you can find a lineup where he works really well. Like, you know, I'm sure over the next, you know, 20 games or so, they're going to try him out in different spots,
yep.
You know, playing with different players. And maybe you hit something that's like, oh man, he works really well with this player. Like maybe he works really well with Turner. Maybe there's a bench unit where it's Turner, him, and all the bench guys, something like that. Cause I think that could work in some sense, but I think that's why you sign him. It just adds depth. I mean, this is another guy who at least can play in the rotation in the playoffs. It puts him to 10 guys now. They're probably going to play 8 or 9 in the playoffs, but this gets him 10 guys to, you know, to use at least.
Yeah, you could put him in the playoffs and be confident that you won't get totally killed. Like if you had TJ Leaf in the playoffs, I just think you're going to get killed. So I do like that. Another thing I like about Booker, he's pretty efficient. His effective field goal percentage has been over 50% every year of his career. Basically means he gets over a point per shot when he shoots. But that's what you want him to be. He started to kind of try to stretch out his game, but he's still pretty bad from three. I think his career high is 34.5%. So that's where I think him and Thad's biggest difference is Thad can stretch the floor a lot better. But I think he'll be good in the lane and be effective there. He's a pretty good screener too, which seems like everyone on the Pacers is. But the only asterisk I have to what I just said is it seems like a lot of people come to the Pacers and become a better three-point shooter, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. So, you know, I could just be blowing smoke with that, but I don't expect him to be behind the three-point line a ton.
Yeah, I don't think he has enough time. I think if he was going to be here for 2 years, like this season, next season, you could say that, but I mean, it's too late in the season for him really to change his game, and he's averaging 0.2 of a three per game in his 33 games with Philly, so I'm equating that. I'm trying to do math in my head. It really equates to like 6 threes taken the whole season, basically.
With Philly, he took 7 threes in 33 games.
Oh man, I was close. I
did that. Very good.
I was actually not bad. I'm gonna give myself a pat on the back for that one. but that's basically what it means. I think it's interesting that Pacers, you know, they're basically through the first 50 or before the All-Star break amount of games they were ever there were basically reliant on their offense kind of outweighing how bad their defense has been. But since the All-Star break, they've now essentially added two pretty solid defensive players, I would say, in Robinson and Booker. And it gives them just a different dynamic going into the playoffs because I think they maybe won't be as reliant as just needing the bench unit to score a ton. You know, with Jefferson, it was like he had to score 8 points or he wasn't effective. But Booker, because of his defense, can be out there with the bench guys and only score 2 points but still be a positive.
Yeah, and the two guys you just said, Glenn and Booker, are both solid on defense, which is nice. I think they'll actually pair pretty well together. Booker's like, and he's not a great passer, but he's not a bad passer. Robinson's still a good cutter and floor spacer, so I think they'll work nicely together. And I just like having 10 guys for the playoffs. Now you're more situational, and that is, you know, we talk about Nate a lot and what he's good and bad at. That is something he's good at, is getting the right lineup in any situation. So I do like that he has more versatility with that now too.
Yeah, I have one worry though, that if they have 10 guys who can play, Nate will play all 10 too many minutes in some sense. Because honestly, in the playoffs, he should just have to play Vic 38, Turner 35. But you know what I mean? Those guys that many minutes, as long as they're not in foul trouble. Knock on wood for Turner and Sabonis, who seem to be in foul trouble every other game. But if it also was Vic on Monday, was in foul trouble. But what worries me is that he goes almost too deep in the playoffs. Where I think in the playoffs, you got to just say, I'm going to play these 8 guys most of the time, and I'm maybe going to sprinkle in a little bit of the other two. But he can't get too fancy, because bench depth isn't really as important in the playoffs as it maybe the first round it is, but after that it stops being really at all important.
Exactly. It's all about your stars.
It's all about your top three, really.
And again, injury assurance is key there, because if he does have to be one of the 8 guys, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it's worse, but it's not the end of the world. And that's very huge. And getting him for a minimum is huge. You know, Before Shams Charania, I don't know how to say his first name. I apologize. Shams. Okay. Before Shams Charania reported that it was a minimum deal, I thought that he was picking Indiana because they could pay him more. You know, they had that $5.8 million in space, but it's just a minimum. They're only paying him for only, I put in air quotes, $457,000 for his rest of the season deal. So, you know, they still have, I mean, this is probably not relevant information, but like if Chris Bosch comes back or something, I don't know. They still have space to waive someone and sign another player. And they just got him for cheap, which is nice for everybody. So
don't you wish like in the NFL cap space was rolloverable? You could roll it over season by season.
No, I don't.
Oh, I do. With the $5 million space, that would be really valuable next year to have that plus whatever you have, you could to a max deal. But no,
I don't like that because I like when everyone gets paid.
Well, no, you get paid eventually. It's just you can roll it over so many seasons.
No, I mean like minimum guys, like if you're on the fringes of the league, it's even harder to get in if cap space rolls over.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it is. I mean,
that's why there's maxes at all, because this is a random tangent for listeners. The reason max contracts exist, right, is so there's enough money to go around for everybody, because I think it'd be better for parity if like the Magic could offer Ben Simmons $80 million a year and then they'd get their superstar finally. But at the same time, then they couldn't offer no one else any money. So the reason maxes exist is to get everybody. The NBA is all about being equitable for all the players and the
middle class NBA players, and that's what the maxes is preventing exactly. a cluster around the 12 best players who really decide the league getting $80 million each.
Yeah, and then Draymond's been on the forefront of the making sure everybody gets paid stuff, and I like him for that. But that was a random tangent anyway. Yeah. I like the cheap deal for Booker. I really see very very few downsides. It's just the only thing that sucks is they have to waive TMJ, and they didn't get to see a lot of him. But it's a 10-day. It is what it is.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that cap stuff right now. I have a lot of opinions on that, but that's not for today. That's for a summer talk.
You have an article you just wrote.
Yeah, I did. I just won the posted on Wednesday morning about Sabonis and Horford comparison. Talked about it on our Tuesday show. Talked about it on our previous week show, too. I wasn't sure I was going to write about it to get off with, but then kind of the best idea I had. So that's what I wrote about. It was pretty good. I compared them to the Hawks, 14-15 Hawks team, to what the Pacers could be in 2020, how – you know, I know that Hawks team didn't have great playoff success, but they also ran into LeBron James. And I think any team, no matter how many wins they got, was going to lose to LeBron James in the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, winning 60 games is an accomplishment. If the Pacers could do that in two seasons, that would be an accomplishment.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good piece, so you guys should read it.
Then you got a piece. Well, I just posted on Devin Booker. Or not Devin Booker.
Well, actually, hilarious. Shout out to Jonathan Matthews for telling me this. Trevor Booker has a relative named Devin Booker, and it is not the Devin Booker. But anyway. Yeah,
that was a slip of the tongue, though. Trevor Booker. I posted 2 hours ago.
I'll have a more in-depth piece about Trevor Booker out tomorrow, his strengths and stuff. And then I want to do some on Glenn Robinson's cutting by the end of the week, too, which will be fun. But
and then you're also going to have another show. It's going to post if you listen to this right on Wednesday night.
Wednesday night show, rare. Hawks recap up tomorrow. And then we'll be back to do Wizards and Bucks preview together on Friday.
Yep, which will be important because those three games are going to be critical to whether this team is going to be the 5 seed or the 7 seed.
Humongous games. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What's the standings right now? After last night, the Bucks played the Wizards last night, so I got to pull up the standings to make sure. But they're tight.
Bradley Beal, clutch. Bradley Beal. The Wizards are 1.5 games ahead of the Pacers. The Bucks are 1 game behind the Pacers.
Yeah, so they could widen the gap between the Bucks, get to like a 3-game lead, or and then close it on the Wizards, or they could go the exact opposite ways.
Yeah, could go a lot of ways. Also, I know we talked about doing a Pistons watch because they were the team who could, in theory, eliminate the Pacers. Well, one, they've been struggling. Two, the Hornets are now 1/2 game behind the Pistons. And three, with every Pistons loss, it gets less and less likely that it even happens. I mean, making up 6 games in a 22-game span is insanely hard. So
maybe it should be Hornets watch, who we play twice at the end of the season.
Hornets watch is more realistic. But, catching up 6 games in 22 is insanely hard. So
yeah, it would take a tumble by the Pacers, which is not – they have a very tough schedule. I think they have the toughest schedule.
But a magic number of 16 combined wins between the Pacers and Pistons is not that crazy hard.
Yeah, and also that Mavs loss is going to come back to bite them because it's a bad team they needed to get.
Yeah, the Mavs somehow have their number, but I that was a weird game, man. But
it was. I talked about it on yesterday's show.
I know. But I didn't get to ramble. You got to ramble.
That's true.
That's just a weird game. I don't know. I couldn't explain it. JJ, how does JJ Bray do it? It's crazy.
I don't know. That behind the back pass was insane.
Insane. He's so good for his size. I said in Slack chat, I'll say it to you, you know, what if Joe Young's ceiling is JJ Barea? I would love that.
No, JJ Barea is better than him. JJ Barea.
I know, right now.
Almost the second best player on a championship team that year they won.
That's true. Ceiling. Yeah, you're right. Damn.
JJ Barea was like the second best player on that team in 2011, almost. Almost, in the playoffs at least.
Oh, he was good. He was actually good.
Awesome. He played better than Derrick Rose played against the Heat.
Yeah, he did. He was good.
And Lance was just dead. Lance just got caught looking around, not knowing what was going on half the time.
Yeah, he did not have a very good game.
No, I mean, it worries me if could that be playoff Lance?
I don't think so. I think he'll dial in. He did last year and when he was on the Pacers before.
Yeah, hopefully he'll dial in, but I don't know.
If he's
cold, it stinks.
You know who else is going to dial in the playoffs? Trevor Booker.
Hopefully he will.
Hopefully he does. This has been an emergency Locked On Pacers podcast. I'll be back tomorrow to recap this Hawks game. I cannot wait to be done talking about the Hawks. Other than that, be on the lookout for our Friday show. As always, we'll be back together. We're excited to kick off a fun March month of a game every day. So lots of content coming from us. That's all I got. Follow the Twitter @LockedOnPacers.